Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another exciting episode of Discussions with Delia Farquharson. Delia is a licensed social worker and experienced life coach, dedicated to helping you achieve your goals and become your better self. She specializes in helping others identify the connections between your thoughts, feelings, and actions. Welcome, Delia.
Good evening, and thank you for joining us for another episode of Discussions with Delia. I'm your host, Delia Farquharson, and, I won't say that it's the blizzard that wasn't, because in New England, they got a wallop. So in the New York area, while we got a relatively small amount of snow, it wasn't an overwhelming blizzard, we're just grateful that nothing devastating happened and we got through it safely. So I am grateful for that. So before we get into our discussion this evening, let me say good evening and welcome to my guest co-host, my awesome husband, Raymond. Hi, Raymond.
Hi, Delia.
So, you know, the blizzard was a blizzard that wasn't. And we got through it safely, so we're grateful.
Well, some people are not happy.
Some people are complaining. But, there's some people who will complain no matter what. So remember, you can call in live on 619-639-4621. That's 619-639-4621. Now, for this evening's show, Raymond, I thought, you know, we've missed a couple weeks. I've had other things to do on a Wednesday evening. Last week, I was in the city doing a presentation. So because we've missed a couple weeks, I thought it would be a good opportunity today to just kind of reconnect with the audience, to say that it's a new year and how Discussions with Delia came to be. So you want to talk a little bit about how it came to be?
I'll leave that up to you. Go ahead.
So, you know, I mean, we always talked about doing a radio program. I think you think you have a radio voice. Let me hear it.
No, I don't. I just say, hi, Delia, how you doing?
But it's just that, I mean, this is one area that we've always talked about exploring. And when the opportunity presented itself, we talked about doing this. And, you know, I my friend Louise, said, why don't you do it online? And I thought, brilliant. And so that's how, you know, I started doing Discussions with Delia online. And, you know, it's always better to talk to someone than to talk to yourself. And, you know, Raymond's a good companion.
You volunteered.
Yes, you volunteered.
Yeah. Volunteered.
And so, you know, so that's how that came to be in terms of, yeah, you know, I, as a social worker, and someone who works in mental health, I thought it's really important for us to have this discussion, to always be putting this topic and finding how it's relevant to other topics and putting that out there. I think it's really important. And so that's the focus of Discussions with Delia, is taking a look at mental health concerns, and how mental health interjects or interfaces or connects with other aspects of life. And, you know, we briefly did a program on radio that was really well received as well, but that's an expensive venture, and that's, you know, so that opportunity we let go because it was not the right time for that. And this continues to be, I think, an important service. I see it as a service, an important service that we do in terms of providing the opportunity for discussion. So we'll discuss anything, and we invite people. If there's a topic or a situation that you want to discuss, feel free to call. Feel free to share. You know, we're always looking for great guests. We've had some really wonderful guests. People promoted their books. people have promoted different things, and it's really, you know, always great to have that. So we're always looking for great people to talk with and to engage on various topics that interest our community. And our community is a global community. It's not just a local community. It's a global community. So, that's how this came to be. And I tell Raymond all the time that it wouldn't matter to me if there was nobody listening or only one person listening. I mean, I feel so passionately about it that I would do it anyway, you know. So if you can find something that you would do even, you know, just for the sheer pleasure of doing it, I think that's a really great thing. I think it's really awesome if you can identify that, you know, something that you would do no matter what. So what say you, Raymond?
Amen. in terms of the programming and having access to, you know, where folks anywhere, as you said, it's a global, it presents a global platform where, and not only that, you can always go back, you never miss a program, you can always, you know, go to archives and, you know, and I never thought about this platform in terms of radio or having a platform to be able to share any kind of information. And I think this was a great idea in terms of not just burying a thought that you have, but being able to explore it and see where it goes. And, you know, how long we've been doing this now?
More than a year.
Mm-hmm. It's not a fad. It's not a passing thought or idea. I think we, as you said, we have had varying guests on the program, from, you know, books to thoughts to colleagues to friends to loved ones. I think of Marissa.
Yeah.
And we invite, as you said, others to join in and share your thoughts and ideas that you might have. Or your own experiences, you know, obviously, you know, bearing in mind the context of
and that's just a half hour.
And the goal that we have.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So
today I came across, not today, but over the last week or so, I've come across two articles.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, these are just thoughts, you know. Oh, the term that I've really become enamored with, I'm going to say, is thought leader. I like to think of myself as a thought leader, and I've been seeing that word more and more, those words more and more.
Sorry.
But I like to think of myself as a thought leader. What do you think about that?
That sounds like a thoughtful thought. Thought leader.
Yeah, so as a thought leader. But one of the things I think is really important is to engage people about ideas, not just about people. So, for example, most recently, the Miss Universe contest happened. And Jamaica had a really beautiful, I didn't see her talent because I didn't really watch the show, but beautiful girl representing the island nation of Jamaica. And it seems that she was really popular because after it was announced that she had come in as the fourth runner-up in fifth place, there was booing in the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when I saw one picture where it seemed like the pageant, you know, the contestants were divided into two camps, where one camp surrounded the winner, Miss Colombia, and one camp had elevated Miss Jamaica on their shoulders.
Oh, really? I never saw that.
Yeah.
Really?
So I saw that. Yeah, I saw that picture.
Interesting.
It was very interesting. And so, you know, Miss Jamaica seemed to have really been popular, and she really, you know, commanded a lot of support, and, you know, and I have to admit, I have a little bit of a problem with these contests because I feel like they celebrate values that I'm not sure I necessarily endorse.
You mean the beauty pageant itself?
Yeah, the beauty pageant. And I feel like, especially in a country like Jamaica where, you know, we are, you know, people of different colors and hues and different ethnicity and different, you know, racial backgrounds, and we're just this really magnificent rainbow of people. Mm-hmm. But from my perspective, and I may be wrong, it seems like the people who are the ladies, who are the girls who are sent to represent us on the world stage, usually have a European twist to them. And so part of that for me, I wonder, and this is what I said in my Facebook post, I wonder about the little girls who are Afrocentric, who look like Lupita, and who perhaps dream of becoming a beauty queen. But maybe they're not connected. They're not connected to the power structure. They're not connected. They're not, you know, and they're not of the right hue. And how will that impact their self-esteem? So I hope in selecting, you know, whoever is representing these many countries that have people that look like us in Jamaica, that it's being done in a fair way, and that, you know, there's no bias because you are so-and-so's daughter or granddaughter. So I hope that it's just being done in a fair way.
Oh, boy.
I can only hope.
That's a lot. That's loaded.
It is.
Gosh, if we were on live radio and folks calling in, this would be interesting. So, all right, I could do you one better and say, well, listen, if you look at the contestants who were the final 10 or however they selected them, none of them looked Afrocentric. So the powers might be in Jamaica might say, well, why...
In order to win?
Why send someone that looks like Lupita when she won't make it out the box, because that's how the general masses see it? Why not send someone who's closer to Miss America so that, you know, or that look, that European look, so that therefore she has a better chance, possibly to even win, because all the ones that we have sent who have done well.
And all I'm saying, Raymond, is that if it's done fairly and she really is the cream of the crop, then I have no problem with it. But if connection and name and color is going to play a role, then I have a problem with it. And, you know, it was really interesting. My friend Mary responded to my Facebook page, and what she said was how she had a friend from Haiti, and the friend talked about growing up in Haiti, how always it was the lighter-skinned girl who played Mary.
Well, we've all seen that.
And I remember there was a girl named Jacqueline. Her last name was started with a G, and she was always Mary when I was going to school, too.
Did she look like what we think Mary would look like more than anyone else?
No, she was the lightest girl in the class. And she was always Mary. And I remember I was the smartest girl in the class, but she was always Mary. So, and I mean, and this is years, and I still remember that. So,
But I think, I think there's a place for that conversation in terms of why do these things happen? And maybe in our own rooms, in our own houses, in our own thoughts, we have ideas about it. But just to kind of put a bow on the thought that you made, if it's who you know or who your father is or who your mother is, the connection you have and all of that, if you're saying that should be discontinued in the on the island of Jamaica, it will never happen.
And that's
move that thought along, because that will never, ever happen.
But
will always matter who you are and who you're connected to.
Yeah, and that's what makes me sad, though, because that's really what makes me sad. I feel like that if we could be relatively certain that's not playing a role in it, that the connections and the name and the color are not playing a role in it, if we could be relatively certain, then, and you know what, I think I am just as supportive of Jamaica as the next person.
No.
But I am not blind in that support. And I think that there are things in that society that needs to be addressed, that needs to be changed, that needs to be called out. And I refuse to be blind. Anybody else can be blind if they want to. They can be blind to it if they want to.
Yeah, but the problem is this. No one has debated what Usain Bolt does, because it's not subjective.
Right.
It is what it is. What's her name? Shelly-Ann. it's the same thing, or, you know, so those things are in a totally different category, you know, because...
Or if you spin, right? If you spin.
It's proven, mm-hmm. and therefore, but if you're asking folks to be suggestive, or you get a contract to do things, or you are permitted to facilitate certain businesses or thoughts or ideas, and there's a financial gain. Anyway, that, don't get me started with this, but this is, there's no way it goes any other way. Even if she looks like you, Delia Farquharson, it will also be because of who she is, who she knows, and who knows her.
Well, I think that's really sad. But, you know, I'm going to make a, you know, because we'll put a bow on it. Like you said, I think that was the bow. We'll put a bow on it, Raymond, because I don't want to change anybody's mind. I just think that we're all free to feel how and express ourselves how we want to.
It doesn't make us any less patriotic. We don't love our country any less. But
so there's another article that I want to kind of turn our focus on too, just for a few minutes. And the title is "Unemployed 55 and Faking Normal," and the article was written yesterday by somebody named Lizzie White.
Unemployed
55. And faking normal.
Normal.
Yeah. And the article talks a little bit about, you know, women who are looming onto retirement and how they are living their lives, faking the normals, living their lives the way they once did, continuing to try to live their lives the way they once did, even though they don't have money and they're having a difficult time and they're really struggling. And what that's like. And I think Lizzie Smith is saying that this is her experience. And I think it's just a really brave article because it talks to or it speaks to the experience of these women who are really struggling and struggling to keep up. And, you know, the article starts in an interesting way. It says, you know her. And when I thought about it, yeah, I think I do. Because there are women, perhaps not in my friendship circle, but in my association circle,
okay,
who I think are struggling with this, Raymond, and I read you the article,
right?
Who are struggling with just kind of keeping up, still trying to maintain that appearance, but really not doing so and not doing so well. And there may be other things going on. There may be a little bit of depression going on or other things going on with this person. But I thought, you know, I mean, I just think that this is a really interesting article, and I posted the article on my Facebook page. And what I'll do is I'll put it on Twitter as well at Discussion Delia, so folks can, you know, take a look at this article, which I think, you know, really.
But I mean, in terms of, you know, 50 whatever, 40 whatever, whatever it might be, and as history says, it's not a level playing field for women in the workplace, and they get a lot of time, you know, the short end of the stick.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of women who are, you know, 55 and unemployed and, you know, faking it, I guess faking it becomes what they are projecting in public, and a lot of times these things are projected through some, not only in face-to-face interaction, but in social media, what they post, what they say, how they do this or how they do that. But hidden behind that, you know, the thought then, wow, how hard must it be, you know, to be able to be in such a world and your just your mental health.
Right, isolated, right?
Yeah,
because if
your
you're right, because
yeah.
if the relationships that you've had, it's based on this false premise where you can't really, you know, people are saying, oh, let's go to lunch. And you go into lunch and you're ordering water instead of the wine that you usually order. But you can't say to your friend, you know what, I can't really afford this. I can't really continue to engage in this kind of, in this level of activity. You can't really say that. That's isolating because you're not really having fun.
But what makes you guard that? What makes you, and I'm not saying you have the answer, I'm just,
but let's think about it. Yeah, go ahead.
You know, what makes you not share? You know, I lost my job, or the contracts are not coming in as they used to. you know, I'm separated, I'm divorced, whatever it might be, you know, what is it that, why we guard?
Well, you know, Raymond, I think part of it is shame.
Mm.
It's a sense of shame that comes from, you know, feeling like, okay, I can no longer keep up. So I'm, you know, somehow my worth as an individual, as a person, as a woman, is somehow diminished because I cannot no longer keep up and do these things.
But
so there's a certain level of shame that comes with it.
But does that say something about not just us, but also our friends?
It may be self-imposing or
It could be.
Mm.
Or it could be a little bit of both, yeah? Where me sharing anything like this with my friends, then therefore they're going to look at me because maybe I would have done the same to them. I don't know. I mean, it's a whole spectrum of things. But I think people would like to know that if something goes wrong, if the trains come off the track, if my life is drastically changed, you know, yes, your job is what you do, but it is not who you are.
But sometimes,
we don't necessarily live that way.
Right. Because sometimes, for some people, Raymond, your job is who you are.
Yeah.
Right? That's how you define yourself. I am the this, or I am a that. And so, because that's how you define yourself, when that is taken away, your identity goes with it. You know,
yeah.
I remember one of the presentations I did last week. Is that what we talk about? How do you identify yourself? What makes up your identity? All right? So you're female, you're male, you're, you know, social worker, in radiology, your father, your husband, your brother, you know, but you might be, you know, personality that, you know, is able to pick up the check or, you know what I mean? So presenting that, you know, status. Is that it might be an important part of your personality, you know, part of your identity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what you drive and how you dress, those may be really important parts of your identity. And when that happens and, you know, that's stripped away or that's threatened or taken away in some way, then you are left feeling like, oh, my God, you have to protect that. You have to guard that.
Yeah. And the more I listen to you saying this, I realize then possibly because you think that way, you gravitate towards people with like-minded thinking.
That's right.
So therefore, you know what folks say about
people
who are
not doing so right.
Because once, I mean, you were part of that conversation, maybe. No, but I really feel that folks who find themselves in such a situation, then I ask the question, what should they do? How should they approach this? What should they change? Because if they change nothing, nothing will change.
Right.
So therefore, what
do you do?
What's the starting point? What do you do tomorrow morning?
Right.
What do you do right now?
I think the starting point is to find someone. There has to be at least one person with whom you have an honest, authentic relationship where you can say, do you know this is my truth, that I'm really struggling, I'm having a hard time, and I can't afford to do this. So just having one person with whom you're able to kind of unburden that, to just kind of let that go, to just be yourself, to be able to say, you know what, I can't go to lunch and I cannot afford that $12. Because that $12 glass of Chardonnay, you know, $12 can feed me for a week in my new normal. So understanding that and really communicating that to people who, because what you might find in doing that, what one is that it liberates you, it frees you from the burden of keeping a secret, but two, you might find that people are willing to help and they might have resources and they might have connections that they can help you with if they know that you're in need. So I think it's really important to find at least one person. And you know, it's a good time to say that everybody needs at least one person with whom they can be totally honest. Totally honest.
Yeah. And probably that's what's missing a lot of time, because I think maybe we don't trust that there's anyone who can be real. You can be real with them because they're going to be non-judgmental and they're really, truly a friend.
Right.
Meaning they will share with you what's real and not to hurt you, but more so to help you. I mean, that's the point in terms of finding that person that you're able to truly, honestly trust.
I think that's a really important thing.
And share with them. So maybe that even start long before we get to that point.
It should,
yeah,
right?
We should have in our circle someone, at least one person.
So that you don't have
yeah.
to get to that point,
yeah.
right? So it's really important to maintain honest relationships, honest dialogue, and you know, sincere friendships. With someone, with at least one person who you know, no matter what, that person will not judge you.
Yeah.
That person will always be supportive and kind and compassionate towards you.
Yeah, and I have a dim look at that in some sense, because I think the world we live in today, the social media disconnected electronic world we live in, lends itself to this faking. Lends itself to no one really know what's real or true. Lends itself for us to be more than we really are. You know, we don't necessarily have to be down on our luck. We don't necessarily have to be 55 unemployed and, no, we're talking about faking it. But, you know, I think it lends itself to people to believe that they are more than what they are.
I think a lot of times we do that.
And it doesn't help.
No.
So now when you have now elevated yourself to such an extreme status and know everything in real world is taken away, it's a further place to fall from. And you can't afford to have that.
Mm-hmm.
So who knows what's real? You yourself sometimes forget what's real. You know, it's the car you drive, it's the pictures you post on Facebook, it's the dinner that you have, it's the glasses of wine, whatever it might be. So therefore, when your life changed, you know, you can't tell anyone. You can't even, you know, tell anyone that the one that you were posting wasn't real anyway, because the little that you have is now taken away. So living within your means and having someone that you can share with and being real, at least with one person, I think will safeguard being out there on your own.
Yeah, I think that's important, Raymond. I think it's really an important thing to be able to have that. And so, you know, where do you start? You know, where do you start in terms of, you know, in terms of finding that or deciding that? It might be a relative. It might, you know, there's got to be somebody who you can trust, who's not going to, you know, who can reach out. The part of the article, which I also thought was interesting, Raymond, is that it talks about how the person in the article also qualified for food stamps. So part of it is that, you know, is that fake, you know, that pride holding you back from saying, you know what, I mean, if I qualify for that, why not avail myself of it, right? Why not, you know? So.
And I guess it's hard. It is hard for anyone once your life changes such a drastic way.
It is hard. It is hard. But what's more important, right? I think, you know, If you're having this difficulty, so it's hard enough not being able to afford things. Then on top of that, you're putting self-imposing this idea that I've got to keep it a secret, maintain this status. You know, so is that necessary? That's not necessary. So relieve yourself of that. If nothing else, relieve yourself of that. You know.
Yeah, and someone sitting there saying, "Wow, I hear you," but that's easier said than done.
But you know what? Once you do it, then that's it. Once it's done, it's done.
Right. It's the first step.
Yeah.
I think that's the hardest step. You know, the first step towards moving or resolving or so.
There'll always be something. So, I mean, I'm going to say that, you know, if you don't have that, seek that. Seek to have one person, find one person with whom you can connect on a really honest level. And until next time.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Discussions with Delia. Check us out on the web at discussionswithdelia.com and like our Facebook page, Discussions with Delia. Please follow me on Twitter at DiscussionDelia. Thank you again for listening. Peace and blessings.